evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, October 9th, 2019. Foreign Bota Bota drivers in Bor are attacked again.
I saw the group of people coming, carrying their big trees, even these bamboos, attacking people. They are beating foreigners. They are beating very terrible.
And a South Sudan opposition leader warns that there will be a heavy price to pay if a unity government is not formed next month.
If we don't form the government on time, then people will lose confidence in the leadership of the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. 6 motorcycle or Bota Bota drivers who are foreign nationals working in the Jonglei state capital of Bor were attacked by local youth yesterday. The head of the Ugandan community in Bor says 4 Ugandans and 2 Burundians were injured in that attack. Dangai Dang reports for VOA from Bor.
24-year-old Ugandan Idi Joronga says local youth beat him up in a local restaurant.
I was there to the restaurant of Abanant, and I saw the group of people coming, carrying their big trees, even these bamboos, attacking people. They are beating foreigners. They are beating very terrible. Even they beat me in my arms. I'm paining.
Joronga was treated at Bor Civil Hospital and released Tuesday. 40-year-old Karibobo Joshua, the leader of a foreign Bota Bota Drivers Association in Bor, says he was hit several times in the head by local youth gang and had visible wounds across his forehead.
It's no longer a Bota Bota issue because we can see other business sectors being attacked as well, beaten, and some of their goods taken. So this time around, it is not the Bota Bota issue alone. I'm already a victim of circumstances in that I was also beaten several times by the bad guys with timbers, my telephone stolen, my money.
Okwaro Aziz, chairman of the Ugandan community in Jonglei State, says the attack on foreigners began about 8 a.m. yesterday in Bor.
2 of them were beaten from the sides of the block too. So then they came, they reported to us. So meanwhile, we're still taking those ones to the hospital. We saw another incident happened. So all of them came from there. They're beating everybody in town. But the others, plus those ones from the garages, all of them, they were being beaten. We reported, we did our part, we reported, we called the mayor and the governor, we informed them about the incident.
As he says, he called the mayor of Bor Town and the governor of Jonglei State. Pilifa Yuen, leader of the Jonglei State Bota Bota Association, says the state officials are to blame for the attacks on foreign Bota Bota drivers because they had repeatedly failed to address the conflict between local youth and foreign Bota Bota drivers.
The government is not solving the case to bring the case into the table and make the people to work as a people of peace between the foreign riders and the citizen riders. Second to it, also people mispass the information. That information they pass, it is only Ugandan, which people doesn't want, but it is not Ugandan. It is all the foreign riders as the Bota Botas in Bor Town, but whether you are Eritrean, Ethiopian, Darfur, Ugandan, Burundian, Kenyan, Tanzanian, Congolese, or another foreign through the current nationalists here in South Sudan, or in Jonglei State, because in 2013, it was given out as orders by the Ministry of Interior, and those orders are still there up to now.
Philip says foreign nationals are not usually Bota Bota drivers in other South Sudanese states. Jonglei State Deputy Police Commissioner Chola Chek says all Bota Bota operations have been suspended in Bor Town until the issue is resolved. This is not the first time local youth have attacked foreign Bota Bota operators, accusing them of taking jobs meant for locals. The first attack occurred earlier last month. Jonglei State Law Enforcement Minister Maduku Yuang says authorities are aware of the attacks on foreign nationals by youth gangs. Speaking in Dinka by phone, Maduk says the police have been ordered to arrest citizens attacking Bota Bota drivers.
After we learned that there was an attack on foreigners taking place at the market, we ordered the police and the army all the organized forces to rescue the foreign national from being attacked. These young people were targeting and attacking foreigners, even those who are not working in border.
Jonglei State Deputy Police Commissioner Chola Achie confirmed at least two suspects in the attacks have been arrested. Altogether, Achie says about two dozen foreign nationals were attacked. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
A South Sudanese opposition leader says the party should form a transitional unity government by November 12th, irregardless of whether the pre-transitional activities are completed, noting there's still time for the principals to decide on the number of states and security arrangements before that deadline. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Last month, President Kiir said he would form the unity government come November with or without opposition leader Riek Machar. The SPLM-IO condemned Kiir's comments and vowed not to participate in any government if that is going to be the president's attitude about what is supposed to be a unity government. The group expects the parties to the peace deal to settle the number of states and their boundaries and all security arrangements before forming a unity government. Joseph Bankasi Bakasoro, the leader of the South Sudan National Movement for Change, which is part of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says South Sudanese citizens expect their leaders to form a government in November that will restore lasting peace in the country.
If we don't form the government on time, then people will lose confidence in the leadership of the country. Nevertheless, the five parties who signed the agreement, if they deem to see that we cannot form the government on time, the same five parties should sit down to discuss and come up with another solution. But otherwise, I stand with the formation of the government on time.
The agreement is stipulated that the parties screen, canton, train, and unify all necessary security forces by November 12th, a 6 months extension from the original deadline. Bakasoro says things can turn around in the next 30 days.
We can determine the number of states within this 1 month. We can train the necessary forces within this 1 month because now registration is nearly completed. We just need rehearsals, which can take few weeks, and then we are ready to form the government.
Bakasoro says the principals to the peace deal must make critical decisions at the next meeting in Juba.
We need to put the interests of the people first. What do the people want? The people want us to reform and form the government. That's what the message is coming from the grassroots. Then the issue of who hold which position and which area of the government position, that is our issue that we can deal with. But what about the suffering of the citizens? Can we consider it and then elevate that suffering by formation of the government?
Earlier this week, U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan, Thomas Hasek, said Washington expects South Sudan's leaders to form a transitional government that includes all the parties, including rebel leader Riek Machar. Machar is expected to arrive in Juba later this month for a second face-to-face meeting with President Kiir. The two met in Juba last month, marking the first time Kiir and Machar met in South Sudan in a year. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Another South Sudanese opposition leader, Lamma Cole, says the South Sudan government should be held responsible if a unity government isn't formed in November. The head of the South Sudan National Democratic Movement accused the Kiir administration of not providing cantonment sites with the necessary support on time.
It has been the argument of the government all along that they need a unified army. They don't want many armies during the transitional period. And many people agree with that. Yes, that we must have one army, but we work out how to do it. And we agree that it can be done in 8 months. Then the question of the state, number of states, because also this is critical. If you don't know the number of states, how would you be able to compose the Council of State? And if you don't have a Council of State, then you don't have a parliament. So parliament is made of two chapters.
Let's go back to the security arrangement issue, Dr. Lam. It appears like when all the groups were asked to regroup and assemble their forces for cantonment, some individual party leaders had no army as they claimed.
It's true there are people who don't have the army, but that cannot stop uniting the other army. The people who have army, it's true, they are there. They were supposed to be facilitated to move to cantonment. That did not happen. they tried to move, and now people have begun to move into cantonment. So it did not stop because there were no army to move. It was stopped because there were no money.
The issue of the number of states is also sticking its head out again. I remember one time President Kiir saying that you cannot tamper with the issue of the number of states because that was the demand of the people. That's according to him. Your reaction to
that?
Where
did you get that demand? Was it through referendum, through what was declared by one person? And there was also a martial visit. It was like a coup, you know. Anybody familiar with the situation in Sudan, they know that when a coup is about to take place, you hear the martial music on Radio Mbruman. So we had the martial music in Radio Cuba. How could that have been a popular demand? Furthermore, there was an IC that was for the what they call the Independent Boundary Commission. And the verdict of that Boundary Commission is very clear. The 32 plus states were rejected by 10 against 4, okay? And the same number accepted the 10 states. The only reason why the 10 states was not accepted is that there is a threshold in the agreement that says the number of South Sudanese who should vote, which majority should be 7, and what was got was 6. But that it was majority, there is no doubt about it. So we cannot be discussing 32 states anymore because they have been rejected by the Indian Boundary Commission. We should be talking about other things. If the government doesn't want the 10 states, let it come up with a proposal.
These are issues that should have been ironed out when you were negotiating the revitalized peace agreement. Talking about it at this stage is very late.
The question of the security arrangement is finalized. There's no issue. There's nothing being discussed about the security arrangement. A matter of implementation, but it is not being implemented because the government did not give the money for the implementation. So that is point number one. Point number two regarding the state, because there was no agreement during the talk, this is why the IPC was formed. And the IPC has given the verdict I just told you about. And they recommended that the parties should sit down to find a solution to this matter. This recommendation was done on the 16th of June and presented to the IGAD on the 20th of June. On the 18th, the IGAD called for a meeting for the parties to come and discuss this matter in Juba. This was supposed to be for 2 days. The only party that did not turn up was the government. They boycotted. They didn't want to discuss the matter.
That is Lam Akol, leader of the National Democratic Movement, speaking to my colleague John Tanza from Khartoum earlier today. You're tuned to... You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Whatever happened to a hybrid court for South Sudan? Well, find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
In your opinion, what are the best ways to fight corruption?
To fight corruption, our people need to be enlightened, and there should be system in place. We need to strengthen our institutions, because if institutions are strong enough, then I'm sure corruption will be minimized.
By setting up tribunal, well, that worked. It worked really very, very smooth for Burkinabes, and in that way, Burkina Faso almost realized their dream, which was fighting corruption.
The best is to have strong institutions which are independent, like the Anti-Corruption Commission must be independent of all that proceedings, giving them powers to investigate, to prosecute, and all that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Human Rights Watch is calling on the Kiir administration and the African Union to come up with a plan to form a hybrid court that will try suspected perpetrators of atrocities committed during the 5.5-year South Sudan conflict. A Human Rights Watch researcher for South Sudan says the AU and stakeholders to the 2018 peace deal have yet to convene a single meeting to talk about forming that court. Lasuba Memo has this report for VOA from Juba.
Nyagoa Tutpur, a Human Rights Watch researcher for South Sudan, told South Sudan in Focus by phone from Nairobi that HRW held several meetings with the government and the African Union, but no consensus was reached on establishing a hybrid court.
From these meetings, it was very clear that, one, there was no shared understanding on the process of the establishment of the court and the roles and responsibility of various actors.
According to Chapter 5 of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement, the African Union shall, in consultation with the government, establish a hybrid court 3 months before forming a transitional government of national unity. Under the terms of the agreement, a unity government is to be in place by November 12. The court for South Sudan was supposed to bring together judges and prosecutors from South Sudan and other countries in Africa to try suspected criminals. Nyagoa says the government and the AU have been silent about the provision.
Although there have been several meetings over the years to talk about the situation in the country, there has been no specific or no particular meeting that was solely focused on the hybrid court and the implementation process of the same. At the same time, the government has employed delay tactics when it comes to the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding.
Poor says the South Sudan government has shown no political will to establish the court, noting the multi-million dollar contract the government had signed with an American lobbying firm to block the process. With just few weeks to go before the November deadline to form a unity government, Human Rights Watch is calling on the AU to set up the court unilaterally. South Sudan Justice Minister Paulina Wanawilo insists the government is not stalling on forming a hybrid court.
All the parties will have to be on board. Well, the number one is the policy that these transitional justice institutions, I will call Commission of Truth, and then another one of reparation and compensation, which were there in the Accra agreement that was signed, has been now taken over by the RP Gono and the other parties. They need to be also put on board. People do it as a government and the national unity.
Despite the fact that not one meeting has been called to begin creating a hybrid code, Wanawila says his ministry and the AU office in Juba have been coordinating on the matter.
I don't think there is lack of communication. We are communicating and through the office of the AU here in Juba. You know, there are those who want to, assume things.
HRW researcher Poor says preparatory activities should have begun months ago. The AU Peace and Security Council is scheduled to meet on October 23rd and 24th in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Poor says AU representatives should organize a meeting on the hybrid court on the sidelines of the security meeting with South Sudanese officials and regional and international partners. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
British Ambassador to South Sudan Chris Trott says the price of oil has gone up and South Sudan has increased oil production. In part three of our interview, Ambassador Trott says South Sudan should use its oil profits to fund the activities of the pre-transitional period. And he says he's working with journalists to get the word out about the peace deal.
In fact, we are working closely with a range of South Sudanese journalists here to try and broaden the space for them in this country, to operate in this country. Because what we are saying to the government is that by allowing the media more space, you allow people across this country to understand better what the peace process means for them, and you enable them then to participate in the implementation of the agreement and the evaluation of the impact of the agreement. So we are working very closely with journalists, and in fact we are working with the media authority and the Union of Journalists to try and help build capacity here, as well as to help the government understand the very constructive role that journalists can play in the implementation of this agreement.
There are sections of South Sudanese who really feel the international community has not done enough to ensure that perpetrators of violence are punished in South Sudan. The talk of the formation of the hybrid court, it has been a talk. No tangible action has taken place regarding that development. How would you talk to such people, or how would you react to their sentiments that they have been forgotten?
They absolutely haven't been forgotten, but I recognize that they have not been the focus of our attention, or rather the attention of the parties to the agreement over the last 6 to 8 months, as they have struggled to meet the conditions of the pre-transitional period. But what we are very conscious of, and what I expect and hope to see, is that once the transitional government stands up, there is a whole chapter on justice and accountability that includes a recognition that there needs to be this hybrid court created. And we expect the parties to the agreement to act on this chapter immediately after the creation of the transitional government, and to start to build the institutions that are required, not just internationally, actually, but ultimately the best way of securing justice is to have justice mechanisms inside this country tackling the results of the conflict and tackling the perpetrators of the crimes that we've seen here over the last 6 years. So what we want to see is we want to see the implementation of every chapter of the agreement, including the justice and accountability one. And it would be a very strong signal for the international community, a very positive signal, if one of the first things that the new transitional government were to do was to sign the MOU with the African Union to allow the court to stand up, because that's where I think the block is right now. The UK is an absolutely committed partner to South Sudan and to its people, and we really want to see this peace agreement being built on to deliver a stable and democratic and free South Sudan, which allows its people to aspire to a different future.
That is Chris Trott, the new British ambassador to South Sudan, speaking by phone from Juba with my colleague John Tanza last Saturday. An independent researcher who co-wrote the report Hope for the Best, Plan for the Worst describes possible scenarios leading to forming a unity government in South Sudan by November 12th. David Deng says in the second part of our interview that the situation is unpredictable at best.
We're now approaching the end of 6 years of conflict because the parties have been dragging their feet, and because there's a lack of really serious political will to resolve issues. Why this is relevant, I think, one is thinking about the risk if the peace process doesn't unfold. So if this process collapses, we're going to be back at square one. We're going to have continued conflict, and there's going to be, much more suffering in South Sudan. But then even if the peace agreement is implemented and we get the semblance of some kind of transitional government, there are also some risks inherent in that, notably the fact that we'll have a VIP protection force in Juba that's comprised of the various armed factions, and that looks very similar to the kind of configuration that led to the outbreak of violence in July 2016. So either if the peace agreement falls apart or is implemented, there are risks that need to be anticipated and managed in order to make sure that we get at least some kind of transition away from conflict.
And how about the short-term scenario where you are talking about the collapse scenario? Take us through that.
So this is a worst-case scenario. And I think here there are, again, two things I would stress. One is the immediate response to make sure that we keep open safe corridors for people to flee to places of refuge. Places like churches and other areas where people seek refuge are treated as inviolable and not attacked by the parties, that UNMISS keeps its door open. These kind of short-term responses that need to be thought through ahead of time in order for them to sort of remain open. And then in the longer term, I think the collapse of this revitalized agreement, it signals the need to really fundamentally reconsider how we're approaching peace and security in South Sudan. And I think first and foremost would be the role of the region. If this peace agreement collapses, I think it's time to recognize that the region is not up to the task, that they're not able to overcome their own sort of narrowly defined interests, and that the AU needs to assert a more leading role within the mediation effort. But then I think also thinking about what a political transition might look like, and maybe revisiting some of the ideas that have been put up in the past about, for example, whoever serves in a transitional government should not be eligible to contest in elections, and thinking a bit more practically about how we can get new leadership that can sort of have a fresh start for South Sudan, and so we can put some of these other problems behind us.
Talking about the region, could you give us your scorecard of how IGAD has been mediating and steering the parties towards implementing this peace deal, the revitalized, I mean?
You know, on the one hand, I don't want to be too critical of IGAD, because clearly this problem is a South Sudanese problem, and the ability of the leadership in South Sudan to make compromises in the interest of peace is what will, you know, ultimately get us out of this mess. It's clear that the region has been acting in ways that protect their interests, and unwilling to sort of exert the kind of pressure that's needed to get the parties to follow through on their commitments.
That's David Deng, who co-wrote the new report, Hope for the Best, Plan for the Worst, with Ali Vergi, a visiting fellow at the United States Institute of Peace. Deng spoke with John Tanza from Nairobi.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That is our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Ashawu by a traditional Zandi group. Listening to a traditional Zandi group performing the song Ashawo. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope to see you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.